Hi, my name is Heidi Sweeney, and I am the Associate Editor at SearchSQLServer.com. Today, I'll be speaking with Jeff Hyten about starting points for building a SQL Server cluster. Jeff is a Microsoft MVP who has been working with SQL Server since 1993. In this podcast, he'll discuss the benefits of clustering, how to get started, and key issues to consider before you click install. Jeff has a BS in computer science from the Engineering Department of the University of Alabama in Tuscaloosa and specializes in high availability and high throughput transactional solutions. Thanks for being here, Jeff.
It's good to be here, Heidi.
Okay, so what are the benefits of clustering?
Well, Heidi, by itself, clustering is of almost no benefit, but as part of an overall high availability strategy, it can be very beneficial. With the right people, the right process, the technology of clustering can give you that immediate response to failure that I don't think any other technology in the SQL world can give you. With a cluster, you have one machine that's doing the work, and this is sometimes called the active system, and another system sitting there watching it continually, making sure that it's alive and responsive. If it becomes unresponsive, it immediately takes over the resources of the first node, the active node, and begins servicing SQL requests. To the outside, it appears as if the SQL server momentarily stopped and restarted, but it's running on entirely different hardware at that point. This immediate response to failure is something that almost no other technology can give you in the SQL world. But again, you still have to have the people and the process to manage it correctly, or the added complexity of a cluster can actually cause more downtime than you're saving with that automatic failover capability.
Now, what would you liken the cluster building process to?
Well, building a cluster is really an extension of building a standalone SQL server, but you're doing it in a very special environment. Instead of installing it to a single standalone machine, you're actually installing it into a cluster, which is two or more machines, with some of the machines taking the role, active role, as it's sometimes called, of actually running the instance, and other machines taking the role of monitoring to be ready in the instance something goes wrong to take over and become an active node.
What does a Windows cluster consist of?
Well, a cluster consists at its bare minimum of three components. You've got two host nodes or computers and some type of a shared access storage system. Now, a lot of people, they look at this shared access and say, well, okay, why can't I run both servers against it? And really, it's just because SQL isn't architected that way. It's designed to scale up. Clustering is not a scale-out technology. A lot of other vendors will sometimes use the term cluster, or even Microsoft will use it when talking about a web farm as a cluster in a different fashion that does indicate some type of scale out. But in the Microsoft SQL world, clustering is purely a high availability or failover technology. But back to the shared access, the cluster service actually arbitrates ownership of this shared resource so that at any given moment only one host computer is controlling the disk resources at any one time, with the other computer ready to stand by, take over those resources in the event of a failure. The only job the second node or subsequent nodes have is to monitor that first node, the active node, and say, are you alive? Are you alive? Are you alive? And it's continually testing that.
Well, when building a cluster, how important is the operating system level?
Well, the operating system level and the SQL Server level are both critical. In previous versions of Windows, the clustering wizard was not nearly strong enough to prevent you from building a non-functional cluster. In Windows 2003, you're able to build a cluster, and it's almost bulletproof. If it isn't right, it won't build it. Also, clustering is only supported in the enterprise level of the operating system. Also, finally, the biggest difference between 2000 and 2003 in terms of support is how many nodes you can have in a cluster. Mm-hmm. Now, the vast majority of clusters are going to be two nodes with a single SQL instance operating between them. But many larger clusters are built using 3, 4, 5, in Windows up to 8 nodes can be in a cluster. In Windows 2000, the limit was 4, and that was only with the Data Center Edition. Also, the SQL Server Edition is critical as well. In the Standard Edition, you're able to have a two-node cluster. Again, that meets the vast majority of the needs for a cluster out there. But you also have the Enterprise Edition of SQL Server. And this will let you build as many nodes into a cluster as the operating system supports. So should Microsoft come out with their next generation and say we're going to change the limit to 16, then SQL in theory would support 16 nodes. Currently, the operating system limit is 8, so that's what we have to live with right now. But that's only with SQL 2005.
Now, what about hardware? What should a DBA consider when selecting hardware?
Now, hardware is extremely critical in a cluster. You're trying to increase availability, but you're also increasing the complexity of a system whenever you build a cluster. And those are normally mutually exclusive goals. You make something simple, it generally runs easy, it generally runs in a reliable fashion. You make something more complex, it's just more ways for it to go wrong. So the way to get around this is to look for items that are cluster certified. Microsoft has what they call the Windows Catalog. They have a special section on the catalog that is cluster certified. These are configurations that are tested and known to work within the Microsoft clustering world. One common mistake is to buy an item of this. I'm going to buy, buying a single node. And say I'm going to run my server on this node, and I'm going to buy the storage system, and then, you know, 6 months down the road, I'm going to buy the other node because I just can't get it all at once. Not only do the items that you select have to be on the hardware or on the Windows catalog for clustering. It used to be called the hardware catalog list. That's why I sometimes cross those names up. But not only does it have to be in the Windows catalog for clustering, it has to be purchased as a cluster, as a unit. Otherwise, it's not really a supported configuration. There's also one other major gotcha that I see a lot of people doing when they're purchasing entry-level clusters. A lot of people get burned on this. A lot of people use a very simple SCSI hot swap array as their shared storage medium. And what this is not a bad thing to do as a standalone system, but it can cause you some grief in a cluster if you don't look very closely. The gremlin in the works here is where does the cache live for that disk array? Data cache that lives on the disk controller cards, which are embedded in each machine, is considered part of the host machine. And you can't use that as byte cache because that could go away during the event of a cluster failover event. However, if you look for an array that has the cache built into it and the controller cards are simply dumb connector cards, then the cache stays coherent during a cluster failover and you won't lose the ability to use that cache under all circumstances.
Thanks, Jeff. Are there any last points you'd like to make on building a SQL Server cluster?
I'd like to go back to the very beginning and talk about the whole three elements of high availability. If you don't have the people that know what they're doing, if you don't have the process for managing and supporting a cluster, then a cluster is not going to buy you a lot. If you have the power going out every 3 or 4 months and you think a cluster is going to fix that, it won't. Both nodes are going to go without power. It has to be part of a comprehensive high availability plan. But as part of that plan, clustering can give you tremendous benefits in terms of availability for handling events such as a hardware system failure, or even give you benefits of being able to maintain the host nodes in sequence without having to take the system offline.
Okay, well, that concludes our discussion on clustering. Thank you very much, Jeff.
Thank you very much for having me, Heidi. I enjoyed this.